And Smashville, good morning and thank you for joining us. Hour two off and running here on a Wednesday. Nick Braden, D. Mace, and the Constable. Greg Wyshynski covers the NHL for ESPN. He'll join us coming up at the bottom of the hour. So I want to get into this discussion because I think this is really a debate, and I would really love to get a lot of phone calls on this and get people's thoughts on this. And of course, the number is 615-737-1025. So Monday, Peter Laviolette recorded win number 600 for his career. And I started thinking, is Peter Laviolette the greatest coach in Nashville sports? And I just want to compare, and you can bring up, you know, Corbin at Vandy, and you can go back 100 years.
I mean, Don Meyer's pretty
yeah.
good.
But for the sake of this, Preds versus Titans, let's compare Peter Laviolette and Jeff Fisher. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to take out this year for Lavi because it's not a completed season. Mm-hmm. But he's got 4 full years. Mm-hmm. He's made the playoffs every year. A 3 seed, a 7 seed, an 8 seed, and a 1 seed. In his 4 years, he's got a Central Division championship. He's got a President's Trophy. He's got a Western Conference championship. And he's got a loss in the Stanley Cup Finals. In his 4 seasons, they've recorded, on average, 103 points per year. And he's got a win percentage in his time in Nashville of 55.4%. He's 182, 99, and 47 in 328 games. So just for the sake of this, I don't want to bog you down with numbers. Just keep in mind, win percentage, 55.4. Mm-hmm. Go to Jeff Fisher. 14 years with the Titans in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. We're taking out the Houston days. Okay? 6 playoff appearances in 14 years. He's got 3 divisions, 1 conference title, 1 Super Bowl loss, and a win percentage of 56.3%. They have so many eerily similar resume nuggets that I think it's a good debate.
Between he and Jeff Fisher?
Lavi and Fish.
That's why.
Is that what you want to be?
I mean, it is what it is. I don't think Jeff Fisher was a bad coach.
He's got three 13-3s.
I think Jeff Fisher was a good coach.
A 12-4.
He gets Jeff a little Fisher bit
had,
of a bad rap.
Jeff Fisher had bad. He had losing records when his teams. One, he was just building his team, so we just went 8-8. Those years we were going 8-8. I think 2 years in a row going 8-8. And the years that we had. That we didn't make the playoffs was the years that we were decimated with injuries. I'm talking about when I was here. Those are the only years that we did not go to the playoffs. Jeff Fisher was a damn good football coach. I think people look at the way his offenses were and they get upset about that. Well, you got to remember back in the days, that's how offenses were. They would run the football, and then throw it every once in a while. That's how now you might have your outliers, but that's basically how offenses ran.
He has become the butt of jokes because of what he did with the Rams and now
exactly.
what McVay is doing. But
absolutely.
That 14 years in Tennessee is, well, that's pretty good.
And things have been so much better since he left.
And I would say.
Exactly. Things have been just a world better.
Yeah. One playoff win since 2003.
Until ownership restabilized, it was garbage. I mean, I agree, after Jeff Fisher. I think if you go from 99 to 08, that run, so you take out the 7-9 and the 3-8-8s when they were sort of working McNair and he became the starting quarterback, and then 2009, which is sort of after the run for everybody, right? Like, that's when he goes 8-8, 6-10, gets fired, and moves on to St. Louis. That run, though, he had 13 wins, 7 wins, 11 wins, 12 wins, 2 bad seasons at 5-4 wins, and then 8 wins, 10 wins, 13 wins. So you're talking 6 seasons of 10 wins or more. I mean, his win-loss record during that 10-year window was pretty stinking good.
Yeah.
And it included a trip to the Super Bowl, and it included multiple trips to the playoffs. So now, did he – I think Titans fans look at, you know, Derek, the loss to the Ravens the next year when they had the best team in the world, and they didn't finish the job with that team, and then they maybe didn't achieve the way you guys should have in the playoffs after that for a variety of reasons, whatever. He's got some Andy Reid to his resume, but only during that span. I think he does get a little bit of a bad rap, the jokes, and he's aware of it too. That long story about Jeff Fisher and SI, where he's, you know, I'm more than an 8-8 coach, kind of like he's aware of the punchline, August 8th and 7-9 stuff. He gets that. He's had a lot of those seasons, but he also had a really good chunk of time in the middle.
Yeah, he did. And if you look at what Lavi has done. And with this team, there are parallels with the Titans and the Preds as far as the last 4 years and what they've done. You know, winning a conference, being the best team, going to Stanley Cup, then get beat in the second round, you know, where many thought they should have been they were the team to beat in the Stanley Cup. That was their Stanley Cup year.
Sure.
And then, you know, this year, you know, kind of battling it out to get in the playoffs, which we know they will make. But it's similar in a sense of what the two coaches did with the two teams and how, you know, the two teams had their superstars and yada, yada, yada. And it's going to come a point where this team will get dismantled, where people will either start retiring, getting older, or they just bring in new faces. And that those years they're closer to happening than not. I say within the next 3 years, this team is going to be – it's going to look much different. And I think it's going to start happening after this season if they don't win the Stanley Cup.
And I think I would be remiss if we didn't sort of – I think we need to couch this conversation into two different conversations about coaches in this city. I think there are sort of the major coaches. There's the guys – the men and women that coach at Vanderbilt and for the Preds and for the Titans. And I think we can talk about those coaches on – if we want to have a conversation about the major sports. But if you're asking who are the greatest coaches in Nashville sports history, Ed Temple is number one, not even close. The track coach for TSU, Coach Wilma Rudolph, multiple Olympic teams. I want to say 34 national titles or something crazy like that. Don Meyer, the head coach at Lipscomb, won an NAIA national championship, one of the winningest coaches in the history of college basketball, 900-plus wins. He's in the conversation. I think we have to kind of go drill down deeper if we want to talk about sort of Nashville sports coaches.
Let's just say over the last two or three decades.
But if you just want to talk about the big sports, if you just want to say the major sports, then it's Jeff Fisher and it's Lavi. I mean, you might even, I hate to say this, but James Franklin's run at Vanderbilt is pretty amazing. Kevin Stallings had some really good teams and some really bad teams.
Tim Corbin.
And then Tim Corbin has a national championship, the only national championship really of any of the major sports for Vanderbilt. So
you want to lump Vandy Bowling into the conversation? Listen, I hear they're good at bowling.
The ladies bowling squad has won some national titles.
So, spares and strikes.
I think Corbin, Lavi, Fisher. I think Barry Trotz might actually be ahead.
I think Barry. You have to put Barry up there because
that's all
he
of
was
them
a part.
At this point.
He was a part of. You know, he was the coach that you know started this thing off with an expansion team, and he got this, and he went through his years of, you know, bad teams and building his team. He and Poyle are building his team. And then, you know, he is responsible for some of these guys that are here now, you know. So, Barry, you got to put Barry up there. Did he go to a championship? Did he go to a Stanley Cup? No. But he helped build the foundation for what is the Predators now. So you got to put him in there.
And that's what, you know, I think good on you for bringing that up because people, you know, if Lavi has more and more success, they win the Stanley Cup, people are going to almost not forget about Barry Trotz, but he's going to be pushed aside. And I think what he did in the early days of this franchise cannot go overlooked because they wouldn't be where they are. I mean, he went through an ownership change and possibly moving to a different city. It was able to, you know, have a decimated roster and still get that team to the playoffs. I mean, that's that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, there's something to be said for when you have success, when stability is not a thing, and that's certainly a tip of the cap to Trotz. I would say Laviolette, and I'm trying to remove my Philadelphia bias because obviously I liked Laviolette when he was with the Flyers. Mm-hmm. I would lean Laviolette. Now, I get it. His body of work, his sample is only 4.5 years. Fisher was here for, you know, a decade and a half. I would go Laviolette from the standpoint of he's been in the playoffs every single year. Now, maybe making the playoffs in the NFL every year is a lot more difficult than the NHL and the NBA?
Yeah, it may be. I just also don't think that anything that he sort of does before getting here counts as part of the evaluation. Now, in like a real human way, of course it counts. How good of a coach is he? Well, everything he's done outside of Nashville counts. But if we're talking about just Nashville coaches, do we eliminate all the things that Jeff Fisher did in L.A.? Do we or in St. Louis, do we eliminate all the things that Lavi did elsewhere?
Well, L.A. too. So.
Like, yeah, I would eliminate the things that James Franklin has done at Penn State when evaluating James Franklin as a Nashville coach. So if we're going to talk about Nashville, I think you sort of have to eliminate the other stuff. It goes into evaluating how good they are, but I don't think it really accounts when you start ranking. What did you do here is what matters. And, you know, Fisher and Lavi, from your point, they both have that run to the championship that fell short, and they both have had some really good teams outside of that. That is – right now, their two-year parallels are the same.
It's a coin toss. You know what I mean?
That's why I brought it up.
You flip a coin, and you can, hey, if Fisher won, Lavi 2, Lavi 1, Fisher 2.
Lavi was in game 6 of the finals. Yeah. Jeff Fisher was a yard away.
Exactly.
So, and I think relative to what Tim Corbin does against his sport and his competition, he's far better than all of them. I mean, relative to other college baseball coaches, Tim Corbin is one of the top 5 or 6 or 8 coaches in the country. So he's relative to his own sport at a much higher level than even maybe Lavi or Fisher is, although Lavi's working his way up there.
All right, what do you guys think? 615-737-1025. Peter Laviolette, Jeff Fisher, currently, and obviously formerly, the last 20 years, Titans, Preds, the two pro teams in this town. Who's had the better resume? 615-737-1025. We'll take calls when we come back. And speaking of Peter Laviolette, is that the best decision David Poile ever made? We'll delve into that as well here on Morning Drive. Oh, how about that for a little irony, coming back with Jeff Fisher telling us that you're listening to ESPN 102.5
Again. And that's not planned, right?
No, I planned that. I'm that good.
All right.
No, it wasn't planned.
So that was random?
So it
was
now random. Confused everybody.
No, it was random. Right. I'm just trying to make myself sound better than I am.
Somebody mentioned Rick Bird, by the way. I want to give credit where credit is due. Rick Bird is a phenomenal coach and belongs in this conversation. I would not put him on the Ed Temple level of the sort of lower tier, smaller school guys. I think Don Meyer is right above him, but I think he's in that group. I mean, I think he's one of the greatest coaches in national history.
Let's actually, is Jeff Fisher available? Yes, Jeff Fisher. So in 10 seconds, can you make your case for the best coach in Nashville?
Well, I mean, look, got here and we started winning. We got the Super Bowl first year as the Titans. I mean, Derek on the team is a great player. I mean, Steve and Eddie. I mean, what more can you say?
What about Cookie?
Coach, why are your jeans so tight now, though? That's what I want to know. Why are you wearing
look,
such tight jeans?
You retire. You're not on TV anymore. I mean, I'm out on the lake in Montana, you know, eating some Funyuns. I mean,
yeah, but he's lost weight. He's lost apparently like 20 pounds, and he's riding around in Williamson County out there. He wants to make it a wedding venue now.
Coach, did you really enjoy doing that long-form interview for Sports Illustrated?
No.
According to the interview, he had a great time. He was driving his ATV up and down mountains out there. Leapers
can you say that Cookie was your favorite player?
Love Cookie. Cookie was awesome.
What are your thoughts about sweets in the office kitchen?
Yeah.
Love cookies. Cookies are awesome.
So you love Cookie and cookies?
615-737-1025. Brian in Hendersonville up next on Morning Drive. Hey, Brian.
Hey, guys. Hey, I got a couple nominees, at least for the top 10. It hurts me as a Murray State grad to say this, but I got to throw Dave Luce and Frankie Allen in the mix there for you. You guys have a good day.
All right, Brian. I'll be completely honest.
Mikael has no idea.
I don't have any
people.
Idea who that is. If you're giving me track and field coaches, I'm out.
Well, Dave Luce, Austin Peay.
Well, and you know, listen, like Rick Ensel's a pretty good coach, right?
Yeah.
So,
any 10th grade softball coaches we want to nominate?
I will say this: if you're going to disrespect Ed Temple, we're gonna have a problem. Don't disrespect
him. Oh, it's not disrespecting. It's
don't
just,
disrespect
you know,
Ed Temple.
Talking about professional teams.
Put some speck on his name, man.
This is a guy.
You keep
who,
Ed's name out of your mouth.
This guy coached. This guy coached the U.S. Olympic team. All right.
Put some speck on your name.
This guy won natties. Yeah.
I feel like there are two different eras for this conversation. There's the pre-pro sports in Nashville, you know, era, and then the post-pro sports in Nashville era.
Where does Vanderbilt fall? There's sort of in between because I think it's.
Do they have an era?
Well, so my
no.
The way I would view it is there's two separate like tiers, right? There's one that's like the pro sports to your point, Chase, and then there's the other one that's like the smaller sports. But even currently, like Rick Bird is still a current. He's not a past coach. He's a current coach. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's more about. You know, we know the NFL is way bigger than everything else in sports. That's just the way it is. The NHL is bigger than anything else that happens in this town. So to me, it's not as much time-based as it is sort of level of interest.
The
in sport,
greatest coach ever in Nashville history is Kim Wisenhunt.
He was so bad.
I'm not sure you got to the T in Wisenhunt before you started laughing.
I just love every time we talk about Marcus, speaking of Wisenhunt, how we omit that era, like when evaluating.
We
I think you
to.
Always bring
well,
it
no,
up.
Well, no, he had a great – he had a nice statistical season, but we just have to sort of say – the reason they were 3, because if you take that win-loss record off Marcus's resume, he's got a really nice win-loss record, and we just sort of omit that season because it's like, oh, well, it's Wiz's fault. Like, I go into the bathroom, if there's no toilet paper, it's Ken Wisenhunt's fault.
Yes, it's Wisenhunt's fault. Even though he went down to L.A. with the Chargers, and man, I mean.
Called a nice game plan in New England.
I mean, he's more of, I don't think, maybe he didn't want to. I don't know. But Mariota didn't fit, I think, what he wanted to do. And he is a play-action, deep ball thrower.
Does Ken Whisenhunt fit around other humans, though?
Probably not.
I don't know.
Rivers, not as a head coach. Phillip maybe as an offensive coordinator.
Rivers has been fine with him.
Yeah. Maybe as an offensive coordinator, but not as a head coach. He can't run the team.
Listen, he did call an – like, all joking aside, he called a great game against the Ravens the week prior.
Yeah.
Now, they almost choked and gave up the game, but that was the defense.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they didn't exactly do much to New England.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they
– Well, they ended up scoring points.
Feel free to block somebody at any point.
Yeah.
Chargers.
He doesn't like blocking people.
No,
he doesn't.
Couple things he doesn't like doing on a football field.
Greg
attacking and blocking.
Greg Wyshynski will join us at the bottom of the hour. But with Lavie and Fisher, let me take this to Peter Laviolette for a moment. Is this the best decision that Poyle has ever made? Because can you separate making a decision? When you're a GM, I think finding the coach is equally as important as finding the players. Can you separate and differentiate?
So I would assume drafting, I don't know what year he was drafted, Chaser, Pekka, but I think finding the goaltender is sort of like finding your quarterback, and I'm not sure in the NFL if finding your quarterback might be more important than finding the coach. They are on equal footing as far as importance. So I think in this argument, I think you could make the case because he's made a ton of big moves.
Pekka was drafted in 2004.
I think you could argue the two most important decisions David Poyle has ever made are drafting Pekka Rinne and. The reason I would put Lavie on this list is because of why he hired Peter Laviolette. And Poyle has talked openly about this. He saw the change in the NHL coming. And he said, we can no longer play this old style of play because the rules are changing. We need to adapt before everybody else adapts. So he went and got a coach that wants to play that free-flowing, fun offensive activation style. And he has said, the reason we hired Peter Laviolette is because we saw him fitting into the modern NHL better than anybody else.
And then Trotsky going win a
right,
Stanley
and then
Cup.
And then he goes and wins a cup.
And has the Islanders first in the division.
Exactly.
But the reason he hired Lavie was part of the reason he hired Lavie.
Yeah.
Obviously a Stanley Cup championship was on his resume, but it was his style and how it was going to fit with his personnel and the direction the NHL was going. And that has been I don't know. Like, I don't think acquiring PK Subban is a bigger move than hiring Peter Laviolette. I don't think that trading for Ryan Johansson is a bigger move or re-signing any of these guys. I mean, trading for Philip Forsberg might be up there, but I still don't think it's as big as drafting.
Yeah, but you didn't. But see, well, and here's the thing. This is where I'll dispute you. Rinne was taken in a round that doesn't exist anymore. He was taken in the eighth round. I mean, yeah, they saw something in him. The story is great that they went to scout someone else and saw Pekka in warmups and they were impressed by him. But you can't draft a guy in the eighth round and think, oh, that guy's gonna be the franchise goaltender. He's gonna win the Vezina Trophy. He's gonna take us to a Stanley Cup. I think Peter Laviolette is a bigger move because he knew the resume. He knew what Peter Laviolette was. He had already won a Stanley Cup with Carolina. He had taken Philly to the Stanley Cup final. So, to me, I see what you're saying. I have to go with Lavie being the biggest one.
And I don't have a problem with that. I'm just trying to come up with what would be in the conversation with that decision. And the only more important thing I can think of than hiring a coach in hockey is I don't care if you got Pekka Rinne out of a vending machine. Like, getting the number one superstar goaltender is the most – it's all hindsight. It doesn't matter how you got him. The decision to pick Pekka Rinne and where he is today and what he has done for the franchise, I don't think there's a bigger personnel decision on the ice that David Poyle has ever made. That may not be as big a deal as moving on from Barry Trotz to hire Peter Laviolette. That might be the bigger decision. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to – what else is in the ballpark?
Like, right.
And the only other thing I can think of is – getting your goaltender like getting a quarterback in the NFL.
Well, I mean, you have to – I think the decision for him to go a different direction with a coach, it has to be big because that one move could have set this franchise back, you know, 5-10 years.
Imagine if John Tortorella was here.
Yeah, so because Trotsky had this team, they were – you know, they would have been a good team with Trotsky. And then all of a sudden you say, you know what? We got to go a different direction. We need to bring in another coach that fits more what we want to do. Just think if you make that decision, you go with Lavie and you don't find yourself in the playoffs no more, or it's this up and down type of roller coaster the last 4 years. Now you've set your organization back because you chose to go in a different direction. That took a lot of sports courage to say, you know what, we got a good team here. The coach we have is good, but we need to go in another direction. And it's worked out for him. So, you know, that more than going out and getting a player, I think is bigger than anything.
Coming up in about 20 minutes, we'll get into the Major League Baseball class of 2019 as far as the Hall of Fame that came out yesterday. But when we come back, we continue with some Preds discussion. Our man Greg Wyshynski from ESPN is going to join us. What does he make of the Preds' recent issues? And how big is tonight's game heading into the All-Star break? We'll talk to Greg next here on Morning Drive. Ah, yes. Every time I hear this, I think of Gary Thorne and Barry Melrose, mid-90s, the NHL on ESPN. But in the meantime, we are going to talk NHL with ESPN's Greg Wyshynski. Greg, good morning. How are you? Do you miss the old mid-90s NHL on ESPN days?
I do to a point, though, because it kind of is back a little bit. We have ESPN Plus as our streaming service, and beginning this season, we've been running NHL games almost every night on the service. We had the Sharks and Capitals score fest last night. Mm-hmm. And that song is prominently featured on In the Crease, which is our nightly highlight show, hosted by none other than Linda Cohn and then also John Buccigross, who, of course, was a staple during the mid-90s NHL coverage. So it's been a nostalgia fest, and it's been pretty cool to get hockey back because goodness knows that our stuff gets promoted a bit more when there's a game to promote.
So, Greg, we were just having this conversation about David Poile. Obviously, a very long and storied career with mostly the Predators, but also a previous stop in Washington. Is hiring Peter Laviolette, in your opinion, the most important decision he has ever made?
Wow. You know, I'd have to go back to the Capitals a little bit to see some of those, you know, moves in the late 1980s, for example, that certainly reshaped that club, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse. But during his tenure with the Predators, it's hard to imagine another move that had that kind of significant impact. I mean, with all due respect to Barry Trotz, I think Laviolette is a very special coach and certainly a guy who's had a transformative effect on this roster. I mean, there have been other moves transactionally in the last few years, the Subban trade being one, the Seth Jones for Johansson trade being another. But I think it probably all tracks back to the guy behind the bench when it comes to the success the Predators have had.
Now, how do you assess this team thus far? Because we've been trying to figure this out. Yes, we know they are a good team. We know they are one of the top teams in the National Hockey League, but they've been on a 7-game losing streak. They have had their troubles on the road. But then, you know, they're beating teams and they're going this hot streak. This team has been as good as they are and as well as they are coached. They've had this sort of, for a really good team, they've had a roller coaster type of season.
They certainly have, but I think, I mean, most of that in my mind is chalked up to the injuries mm-hmm. that this team's dealt with. And they've been significant. I mean, when you take away a top defenseman and two-thirds of your top line from any team in this league, it's going to have a huge impact. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, Phil Forsberg's played 34 games, Victor Iverson's played 27 games so far, and that's significant. I mean, that's going to really kind of mess with your process when you you know, have what I think is the top line in hockey. Cut up and disjointed because of these injuries, and you factor in the Subban injury and others throughout the lineup, and it just hasn't been a run with this group for most of the season. But you know, I think everybody on the outside looking in knows what the team's capable of when it's at full strength, and there's a lot to love here, even if they've been sort of, as you said, on a roller coaster this season.
Greg Wyshynski is joining us here on Morning Drive. Greg, yesterday we had a meeting. We're walking out of it, myself, my producer, and our midday host and Preds TV announcer, Willie Donick, and we were talking about, you know, the emergence of Victor Arvidsson and taking that Jofa line and comparing it to what Colorado has, who the Preds just beat on Monday, and then talking about Winnipeg, how maybe their top six could be the best in the league. When you look at the emergence of Victor Arvidsson with the Jofa line, How do you compare that to what Colorado currently has, and then kind of in another discussion, compared to what Winnipeg has on their top six?
Well, you know, I think Winnipeg's top six is something special, and I don't know if there's many teams in the league that can compare to it. But top line to top line, we ranked the lines recently in the NHL, the top lines, and, you know, there's some good ones, that's for sure. I mean, the Colorado line, Boston's group with Bergeron and Pastrnak and Marchand, there are a lot of contenders for best line in hockey, but, you know, for my money, I think it's the Arvidsson Forsberg Johansson line, because if you track back to the beginning of last season, statistically, they're every bit as good as the MacKinnon line in Colorado, which I think is the gold standard for a lot of people. They don't have the same goal differential just because of the volume of scoring that the Colorado line puts up, but from a sort of rates and ratios and averages perspective, they're very much in sync. And this is such a line that, much like the MacKinnon line, just drives everything for this team when it is rolling and can carry them places, which is a really special thing to have. So for my money, they're the best line in hockey. I'm not just saying that because I'm on a national station. it's the thing that I wrote when we talked about this on our roundtable a few weeks ago.
So I hate to oversimplify things, Greg, but we do live in an oversimplified sports conversation landscape currently. Does the Nashville Predators' ultimate success or failure in this particular season, is it just as simple as Pekka Rinne being really good in the postseason?
Yeah. I mean, because the last time that happened, they played for the Cup. And granted, you know, things didn't go so well in the Pittsburgh series, this weird voodoo curse that he seems to have when it comes to playing in Pittsburgh, you know, on top of the fact that he's been so inconsistent on the road in subsequent playoff series, it really does come back to that. And, you know, I was in Nashville back in November, and it was, I think, right around the time when Pekka, you know, signed that extension. And I remember talking to him about, you know, what does it make you feel to think about the fact that those playoff disappointments are now kind of part of your legacy? And you could feel the determination from this guy to rewrite the script. You know, you could feel the determination of this guy to not have that be the lasting impact. You know, the guy who couldn't win in a big spot in the playoffs. It's not what this guy wants, because I think he fancies himself as one of the best goalies in recent memory in the NHL. So that level of determination gives you a little bit of hope that Pekka, the competitor, is going to be able to figure things out in the playoffs. But boy, you know, the last couple seasons, man, you know, you look at those numbers on the road and then in big spots, and, you know, big time goaltenders, you know, Stanley Cup championship level goaltenders are not the ones that usually get pulled in definitive games in a series. And that's kind of where Peck has been. And it's kind of a scary prospect.
Greg Wyshynski joining us here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final one for me, Greg. You look at this team right now, 7-8-3, their last 18. They're in Vegas tonight before the All-Star break. We know the trade deadline is just about a month away. And I know when it comes to making a deal, it takes two to dance. So, David Poile, in your opinion, do you think he definitively knows at this point whether or not he will make a move before the deadline, or does he go into this break saying, I need to see the next 3 to 5 games, and that will give me a more clear picture as to what, if anything, I need to change before the end of February?
Well, I mean, I think he goes into it thinking he's going to make a deal, because he's never shied away from really tweaking his teams mid-season. He's been a very active general manager to that end throughout his career. And the thing about the Predators right now is twofold. One, they've got cap space that I think you know, they could utilize in some ways at the deadline for some of this available rental talent. Because two, they've got to load up for Bear, man. This Western Conference amongst the elite teams, and there's some clear separation now between the teams at the top of the conference and the dreck that's trying to finish in the wild card. You know, the Oilers just fired their general manager, and yet they're only 3 points out of the wild card, to kind of put that in perspective. But the elite teams are crazy deep offensively, and I think that David Poile knows that, you know, there's another weapon to be had, most likely on the wing, to really bolster this group a little bit and get them ready to play the Winnipegs and the San Jose's and Vegas going forward.
Greg, always a pleasure. We appreciate the insight. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Greg Wyshynski covers the NHL for ESPN, ESPN.com.
It almost feels like his analysis of the Western Conference there is, it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you're in first place or fifth place or eighth place. You better add some pieces because everybody else is coming for you is what it sounds like.
All right, let's give us something away right now. It's your chance to win a pair of tickets to go to the Tennessee Boat and Fishing Expo at the Wilson County Expo Center on Friday, February the 1st through Sunday, February the 3rd. So if you want a pair of tickets, just be caller 5 right now, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, caller 5. You're going to the Boat and Fishing Expo. When we come back, Major League Baseball Class of 2019 Hall of Fame snubs and takes. That's next here on Morning Drive.
Man, those tickets are really easy to win. You know what else is easy? The Xfinity New Year New Deal. It's easy because resolutions are hard. You can now get an amazing deal with Xfinity. Now, through February 3rd, get started with Xfinity TV and Internet for only $35 each a month for 2 years when you bundle with a 2-year agreement. And you get download speeds of up to 150 megabits per second, so you can run all your devices. Plus, you'll get Stars and Showtime. Stars has got a really cool show named Counterparts. Showtime Billions, check it out. You'll get that included for a year. With Xfinity, you can use the X1 voice remote to quickly find and watch your favorite shows on Netflix, Amazon Prime Video, and more. And you watch the best shows and movies, and even live TV, of course, on the wonderful, spectacular Xfinity Stream app with the most reliable internet. This sale ends February 3rd, so seriously, learn more about the Xfinity New Year New Deal today. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit your local Xfinity store. Requires EcoBill paperless billing and auto pay enrollment. Restrictions apply. New X1 starter double play customers only. Actual speeds vary. Equipment taxes and fees, including BTV and RSN fees, are extra and subject to change. After agreement term and premium promo, regular rates do apply. Netflix and Prime Video streaming services memberships are required.
Thank you very much, Mr. Drew. Best of luck this evening as you welcome in the number one team in America, the Tennessee Volunteers. 10.5-point road favorites tonight. Might have to give out a pick later in the show.
That's right.
A pick? You have to give out a pick?
Might have to give out a pick.
Can't wait for that.
It could be time for a pick.
Please.
Can't wait for Nick Cale's prediction on a college basketball game.
This is
making people some money.
Don't want to hear after the game tonight. If indeed the Vols, you know, have a brain freeze and their wrists cramp up and they can't hit basket and Vandy somehow, some way win. Remember, they got to play Vandy again, but it's in Knoxville. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear, oh, they're fraud. UT's a fraud. I knew it. Nah. No, they're not.
Derek,
okay?
That's not the world we live in, though.
I know. It's not.
This is the thing. Like, people forget Tennessee was picked 13th in the SEC.
Exactly.
By everyone. Just the start of last year, people thought Jared Goff was a joke after his first year in the NFL, right?
Yeah.
Let's go back to Twitter and find out what people were saying about Jared Goff after his first season in the NFL.
Oh, he's a bust.
Yeah?
A bum. Get him out of here.
I just, like, be careful first half, Twitter, all right? Just be careful.
Mm-hmm.
Opinions can change.
All right.
Mocks.
Things Mox. Change. Give it to me. Give it to me one time. Come on, right now.
Things change, Mocks. I don't even know if it's accurate.
It's good enough for me.
We'll take it.
Was it good for you?
Good for
fire that pigskin.
Yes. Speaking of firing pigskins, we might have to fire a pigskin at Buck Rising. He's coming up in 13 minutes.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, we're going to have to handle some business.
We got a footballer here I want to throw.
Guys, right here, actually. Oh,
yeah, I would actually, you know, part of my new me, I would like some positivity with Buck today. Yeah. I would like Derek to give him a hug.
Hell no.
But see, that would kill the segment.
It'd be exactly.
It just wouldn't fit.
I tried that before. You know how that worked? It did.
Yeah. How about this? For every nice thing Buck says about our show, we'll say something nice back to him.
I like that. That's
so
good.
So we know he's not going to say anything.
So
nice,
zero things.
There we go.
Us being nice to Buck for a segment would be like Mason doing a golf podcast.
Exactly.
It just wouldn't work.
Wouldn't work.
It just wouldn't work.
We made Buck. You got to remember that. Yeah. We made
That's
Buck.
True. Yes.
It's true. He is our
That's
creation.
Why he's the monster that he is now. He's which, like our Frankenstein.
Which really means we need to blame you.
So we're to blame for
He's our Buckenstein.
For his ego.
Yeah, he's our Buckenstein. We've created a monster. He's alive.
We've driven up his self-worth.
Exactly. He's alive.
Yesterday, baseball class of 2019, Hall of Fame. So I got some questions for you guys, and I got a couple of takes. Mariano Rivera, he gets in. Halliday gets in. Edgar Martinez gets in. Mike Mussina gets in. Rivera, the first ever unanimous guy. The closest of all time, I believe, was Griffey at like 99. Yeah, whatever.
Three people out of like 450 or whatever the number was didn't vote for Griffey, and those three people should be
banned from the sport.
Prison.
You should put him on a ship and send him to the moon somewhere.
And forced to listen to Tackling Music City on loop.
Never to return.
Yeah, like that. Worse than pulled their vote away. Yeah. And I mean, again, I think criminal punishment is fine. Yeah. Maybe death. I'm okay with these things for not voting for Griffey. I'm just glad that it's over with. Yeah. We finally have the first one where we can say, hey, good for you. And nobody's more deserving of Mo. I mean, he might be the. You could argue that he is the greatest at what he does as anybody in all of sports in any sport.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jerry Rice, you know, Wayne Gretzky, whoever, you know, Tiger, whoever you put up on that list, you have to include Mariano Rivera at what he does.
Yeah.
He's the best.
One of the things I want to ask you guys, and this is specifically about baseball, but we can branch it about just the Hall of Fame in any sport. Edgar Martinez gets into the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. I've always been fine with a DH making it in. Because he was a machine. I mean, he just flat out raked for year after year after year. Purest guy will say, he didn't play the field.
Did you hear his numbers against the other guys that got in?
No.
So against Mussina, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong on this, against the three guys that got in, which is Mussina, Rivera, and Halliday, Edgar Martinez hit .373.
Jeez. Goodness.
I want to say he was over 500 against Mo Rivera.
Justification for being in.
That's what I'm saying. Right. Like if you're anti-Edgar, fine. I get the argument. Dude could swing.
But he's been on the ballot, and his percentages have gone up. And now, like Bonds and Clemens, their percentages like go up like a very minuscule tad every year. We can get to that in a moment. But like, I don't understand. Like, how does your resume get better with time when you're no longer playing? Like, guys that have been on the ballot for Canton, I mean, Steve Atwater or whoever it is, like, you're either in or you're out, and it shouldn't change over seven years.
It's not about, I think people, there's a misconception that people's opinions of the player changes. It's the field around them that changes.
Yeah, I think
so
that's what it is.
The reason Edgar gets more votes now, A, because it was his last shot, so a few more people might vote for him. That I don't necessarily like. But if Griffey's not on the ballot, that takes a spot off everyone's ballot, right? So when he leaves the ballot because he's in, that opens up a spot for you to put somebody else in. So it's that what I don't like about any of these Hall of Fame votings is that it feels like we sort of have this forced number.
Mm-hmm.
Like in baseball, I think the rule is you vote for 10 guys, I think is what the rule is. And you have to get 75% of the vote to get in. By the way, Roger Clemens got 59%. Barry Bonds got 59%.
Which is
Curt Schilling got 60%. The fact that Curt Schilling got more votes than Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens is kind of silly.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think people's to your question, I don't think people's opinions change of the player himself. I think the ballot and the field and the number
Who's
of slots.
There?
Right, like if Joe Montana's on the ballot, well, everyone has to put him on. That means somebody's left off, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's all about who's around you more than it is about, I think, the people's opinions changing.
Yeah,
who you
and I'm with you. If you're deemed worthy enough to consistently be on a ballot, then why is it that only a set number of people get in? It's like, because what you're doing is, if you think this guy is a Hall of Famer, you're making it harder the next following year for him to get in.
They act like there's a capacity.
Exactly.
Like it's a restaurant. We can only see 300
people. We only see eight people this year. No, you can.
Mr. Schilling. The restaurant's full tonight.
And we'll let you in, next week. But then next week comes and it's more people that want to get in. Yeah. Then you keep on getting pushed back. So it's like, listen, if you deem him a Hall of Fame.
And that's more of an NFL
thing. It's like, if you deem this guy on the ballot and a Hall of Famer, then let the guy in. Because there are guys on this ballot, on the NFL ballot anyway, that, listen, some guys are first ballot Hall of Famers. They get in, and I get it. I understand that. Their impact on the game was just so big that you can't just, you know, when they're up for Hall of Fame, you put them in and get it over with because you know they're going to get in eventually. But then there are guys that it's like I never understood it. I've always said the Hall of Fame was more so for offensive linemen and defensive linemen because they didn't get the recognition that they deserved. So that's why you see more offensive linemen in the NFL in Canton than you see any other position, I think offensive line and defensive line. But my thing is, again, some guys you let in, some guys you don't. that's why it's critical that, you know, if you're not a quarterback, it's hard for you to get in when you don't win championships if you're not a quarterback.
I think the thing that bugs me about the baseball thing, because you need 75% of the vote. So Rivera got 100%, Halliday and Martinez got 85%, Messina got 77%. After that, you have Schilling, Clemens, and Bonds. Like, you can't tell me, and this is like a side topic, but these baseball writers and their sanctimonious level of thinking with entry into this Hall of Fame, to me, Bonds and Clemens, like, if you don't want to put somebody in because they were on juice and you didn't think they were a Hall of Famer before that, that's fine. But you can't convince me that Bonds and Clemens were not Hall of Famers before they ever stuck a needle in their rump.
Well, that's your opinion, though. So I don't have a problem with somebody saying no.
But, like, Bonds was a five-tool guy bound for the Hall of Fame who became just a home run guy. He had a great arm. He stole bases. He hit doubles. He did everything. But then he hulked up because he saw Sammy Sosa.
And listen, Clemens had that where he fell off a cliff and then went to Toronto and met up with some Canadian doctors and all of a sudden got better. I just don't care. Like, listen, I think there should be I've said this every year we do the same topic. I think there should be a wing in the Hall of Fame for everybody that played during the steroid era and call it the steroid wing and put the guys in. I'm fine with that because you cannot tell the baseball story without telling the story of the steroid era. You cannot tell baseball story without Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, Barry Bonds. You know, Andy Pettit is an admitted juicer, also a phenomenal player. I'm not saying he's Hall of Fame worthy, but you can't do it. And frankly, as much as I think Curt Schilling's personal beliefs are despicable, that should not be a part of the evaluation process. You should be either a Hall of Fame player or not. I wonder if that's held against him. If you don't think Bonds, but if you're a voter, and especially the older voters, if you're a voter and you're like, no, I don't think Barry Bonds belongs in the Hall of Fame because he cheated, I don't have a problem with you saying that. I disagree with it, but I don't.
But in a sport where there was just so many guys at the time, there was just as many pitchers as position players on juice, and we don't know definitively who took what and who took a substance that might have been banned or
we
was
just know who got
well,
caught.
But we know it's Bonds just, and Clemens did. Though.
Oh yes, no, I know.
So and they're also,
and I think what's held against them is the way they fought it. Like they were though they were caught, they were just adamant. Like I did, like remember Palmeiro was waving his finger at Congress.
Yeah. No, again, Andy Pettit's Jason Giambi, I think both guys were like, yeah, I did it. And then we
got it over with.
And we don't care. I think baseball, there is some sanctimony about their statistics. I think they care about their stats more than any other sport. And listen, I don't know if Clemens was a Hall of Famer before he left Boston. I don't know if Bonds was a Hall of Famer before he left Pittsburgh. But that's up for them to decide. And if you say, no, I don't think he is, then I'm not angry at you. I'm not outraged about it. Here's what I will tell you that the steroid era did to me as a baseball fan. It killed my love of the records. It killed my love of the stats. It took that, like I viewed baseball as a young kid as sort of like this pedestal game that I love. Like I love football, but there was something different about baseball. And while the home run chase in the 90s brought me back to the game as a fan because the strike devastated me when they didn't play the World Series in 94, it devastated me as a 12-year-old. I was angry at the game, and then it brought me back with the home run era. But when Bonds broke the record, I didn't care. And if you would have told me I would have seen Hank Aaron's record broken, I would have told you I would have cried at that.
See, and I think that's the thing that makes me mad the most is the whole league, the commissioner, the sport, the writers, they all knew they were taking it.
And they all benefited.
They all benefited. They all profited. And then when it got blown up, it's like, oh, we're going to hold that against you. Give me a break.
Well, I'm okay. I'm okay holding it against Bonds, again, if you want to. I personally, if I was in charge of everything and you gave me complete control, I would say from 1990, whatever, let's say from the strike until when they quote unquote supposedly cleaned it up, whenever that date is, whatever, a couple of years ago.
Yep.
I would say make that an era and make that put that in its own hallway.
I'd be cool with that.
In the Hall of Fame and say, this was this era. Mike Piazza, guy that I grew up loving, belongs in that hallway, right? Jeff Bagwell, like the guys that get in that are, we don't know for sure, they belong in that hallway and tell the story in that hallway about the steroid era. That's part of baseball's history.
Speaking of being overly sanctimonious, Buck Rising is going to join us when we come back for a good 30 minutes in studio. What does he make of Arthur Smith as the Titans' new OC? That's next here on ESPN 102.5 A Game.